Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. And that's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of Sweden this time. But I have the director for our UK office also together with us. We just started off connecting through a video call, and so I've got her on a video call, but I don't have a microphone to actually connect the two of us, unfortunately. So I'm hoping that the sound just with my phone works out well. I've got my phone laying right beside my computer. So we have some very redneck ingenuity going on where the sound of the speaker is right by the microphone on my phone. And then I'm a little bit distanced. I've done it many times, so it works out this way. It's better if I have my microphone. I can't find my microphone anywhere.
You have about 87. How do you not find any of them?
I keep misplacing them and buying another one. Just really simple, cheap microphones. And yeah, I don't know what to do with them.
The last one wasn't that cheap. You got a proper one last time.
I did get a proper one. That one I left in Hong Kong. So that one's in Hong Kong because it's too big to travel with.
It's smaller than your phone.
It is smaller than my phone. But I have to calculate every single ounce that goes into my bag when I'm traveling.
You are lying.
No, I tell you who might have been lying, or at least telling stories, was your grandfather. So just before we signed on, we were talking about this story that you have to share with our audience, because we have to let the audience decide, is this true or not? I just don't believe it. I don't believe it's possible.
Are we going to start like a BCJ game show? Listen to Bethany's stories. You have to write them whether it's true or false.
Yes, please. You got to tell this story.
We've been working together for like 7 or 8 years. I don't even know now. And he just never believes anything I say ever. So I say things that are true and he doesn't believe it. So I'm going to tell everyone a true story that was told to me. And now anytime I find like, I was just saying I have kind of like a lump in my mouth. That's gross. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. It's nothing. It's just anytime there's like a lump, like if I get bitten on my arm or anything like that, I remember this story where my grandfather told me, he used to work in hospitals, and he said that one time somebody had this like kind of lump on their arm and they didn't really know what it was. So he was just going to drain it fluid or kind of see what was in it. And when he like poked it, or I don't know what you do to drain it of fluid, all these tiny spiders ran out. And it turned out that a spider had actually laid eggs inside this person's skin. And that is a true story. Anytime, like I see, like if there's a spider on me or near me, or there's some kind of weird lump, if I've got a bite or a mosquito sting or something, I always wonder, I wonder if I've got spider eggs.
You don't
me.
Wonder, you freak out. You're like, that spider, it could bite me and lay eggs. And I'm saying, no, it won't lay eggs. It can crawl into my bed and bite me and lay eggs. And I said, no, a spider cannot lay eggs in your skin. And you said, yes, it can. My grandfather told me it happened during the war.
Let's hope it never happens to you.
So I said, you have to share this story with our audience because I say it's not true. It's not possible for eggs to be laid in the skin. And you say it is possible for spiders to bite you and lay eggs in your skin.
No. A spider doesn't lay eggs by biting. That's weird. That is ridiculous. Okay. That would be silly. Okay. That's not what I said. I said that, you know, spiders lay eggs, and this spider laid eggs inside somebody's skin. No biting. No biting involved.
Okay. All right. I don't see it being possible. I also, what kind of skin do you have to not be able to feel an animal lay eggs inside of your skin?
What do you mean lay eggs? How would you feel that? It's not chicken.
But I mean, I've had tapeworms, or I've had worms before, because I lived in Asia, right? So I've had worms, so I can feel the worms move. And so I said, anybody that's had worms, I know that you're grossed out right now, but anybody that's had worms knows that you can feel those worms. And you're like, okay, now I know that ticks can get onto you and you don't feel them. And then they begin to suck your blood and you don't feel them moving around because they don't move. And they slowly
eggs don't move. They're eggs.
But they have to burrow themselves into your skin to lay the eggs inside.
Yeah, a spider does. I don't know this. Maybe the guy saw the spider burying, or I have no clue. Okay, I wasn't there.
Have you looked this up? Have you Googled this?
I think we have Googled it, and I think I was right. I don't remember exactly, but anyway, this has nothing to do with the podcast, and everybody's not listening anymore.
It does, because, I mean, so one of the things that we just wanted to come on, I'm so glad that you had time to join us for our podcast today, because one of the things that we did last year that a lot of the people that are together with us might or might not know about is that we started our own publishing company. But it's not a publishing company that we started specifically for writing books or publishing the books that we're writing. So if people are listening to this podcast and they write to us and they say, hey, I've got a book, I want to publish it, and I would like to publish it with the Back to Jerusalem Publishing Company, that's not what we're doing. The publishing that we are doing is specifically targeting a certain type of book that has once been on the market and has been forgotten by the Christian community. So we're bringing old books back to life. And we started that last year, and it seems like there's been a lot of people responding to these old books.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this a few times on the podcast, so people that listen will be familiar with Underground. And when we first started with this idea, we thought, I mean, it feels like a pretty niche thing, right? Like we are we're assuming that there are people that want to read books that are minimum 100 years old, normally around 200. They're the ones that we've been doing specifically about missions.
Yeah, the books are minimum 100 years old, not the readers.
Yeah. And so it feels like we have quite a niche target there. But actually, what's happened is they've outsold a lot of our regular B2J books.
They have.
Which is something that we could have dreamed of happening or felt like maybe. It was one of those things where, you know, when you stumble across an idea and there's that you feel something in your gut, as you would say, where you just get that feeling of, oh, we've kind of landed on something here. But we didn't really know how well it was going to go. But the response has been so encouraging and kind of moving when you just look at all the countries that have been buying these books. And, you know, we have released four now with Underground: A Voice in the Darkness, The Lame Shall Take the Prey, The Terrible Red Dwarf, and Bury Me in China. So we've released four. And we see so many repeat customers, which is so nice because it just means that people are really enjoying kind of digging into these ancient voices that we really feel are needed in our day and age.
There has been a hunger. You and I recognized it with ourselves. I mean, you're of a younger generation than I am, but neither of us are considered to be too old. But one of the things that we are recognizing is that there seems to be a bit of a book revival, a revival in literature, where people are clinging, really going back to some of these older books that are being abandoned by universities and schools. People across the world have seen that academia has gotten rid of a lot of their old requirements that helped shape generation after generation of people that were being educated, and they've adopted new writings that really have no basis, no grounding, no firm foundations. And in many ways, I would say they lack creativity. They lack, I could say that maybe that's because it's something that I don't connect with because it's so new or whatever. But what we are seeing is that there is a desire around the world of people that want to read the writings of people that built our society, not tear it down. They want to see the thinking, the thought process, the writing, the information that comes from those pioneers that helped take the gospel into the hardest reached areas of the world. And I would also say that there is, I've been reading this. I kind of pulled this article up before you and I started our podcast, that it's scientifically proven that reading older literature actually makes you smarter. There was a study done in your neck of the woods, right around the corner from where you're at now, in Liverpool, where scientists, psychologists, and literature academics came together and scanned the brain activity of volunteers that were willing to read older works. So they were reading things by William Wordsworth or Shakespeare or T.S. Eliot. And what they found was that when the individuals read modern translations of older writings or newer books, there wasn't as much brain activity or as much engagement. And I think that a lot of that has to do, according to the study that I've read, is that things are written in such a way that our brain is able to moderately scan the information and pick up the main point. And sometimes the main point has just been said many times in the same dry, boring, most importantly, simple way. Modern day writings, and I'm not talking about scientific writings or legislative writings. Legislation still seems to be a bit difficult for us to read sometimes. Scientific or medical journals seem a bit difficult for us to read sometimes. But older literature, you know this. I mean, this was your major. Older literature just has a different way of bringing about information that we don't use anymore, almost like a forgotten art. And so at this study in Liverpool, one of the things that they found is by reading older literature, your brain is more engaged and has higher levels of activity and shows a better response of being aware of what you're reading. I found that recently just reading some of the older writings that you and I are going through. I pay more attention, and when I read it, I'm like, wait a minute. That sentence, wow, I could not have said that sentence in a chapter more succinctly, more powerfully than what the author just did right there in one single sentence.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's made me read books differently in general. I mean, I was reading a book by Amy Carmichael the other day, and there was this quite short paragraph. I might be able to find it. A short paragraph where she talks about the challenge of telling a story with in a book, like in writing, that somehow you lose the essence of the story. And it was kind of a struggle for her because this book is her telling a story about one particular girl. And the way that she wrote it was so amazing. I took a picture and I sent it to you, if you remember. And I was just like, wow, like just read that. I mean, that was a crafted piece of writing. Another thing that I find about the books that we are looking at and that we're publishing is I think now people can write books on all kinds of topics and all kinds of subjects. And maybe they've studied it for 5 years. Maybe they've studied it for 10 years. Maybe they decided to kind of pick a subject to research it for 1 year and write a book. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for Voice in the Darkness, that was written about 65 years in China. When it comes to Grace and George Stott in The Limb Shall Take the Prey, that was 26 years serving in China. So these guys that are writing these stories, and women like Amy Carmichael, when they're writing these stories, they're not writing after 2 years of mission experience. They're not writing after 5 years of being saved, even though there's nothing wrong with that stuff. But there is something about the depth of wisdom and inspiration and lessons that they've learned through trials and joys that comes out of 65 years serving in China. Like, you've served in China for 65 years. What do you want to write? And that's what Griffith John writes in A Voice in the Darkness. You and your wife have served for, Grace Stott wrote, The Lame Shall Take the Prey. So you and your husband have served for 26 years in one of the hardest areas in the world to evangelize. What do you write about that time? And the wealth and the depth that comes from that amount of, I'm watching The Crown right now, right? You kind of talked me into it because the American's seen The Crown and the Brit hasn't. But it just wasn't something I found that interest in the beginning. But as I'm watching it now, this idea of real diligence, real commitment to your role and to what you do. And the missionaries in the times that we're looking at, they had that kind of single focused commitment where their entire lives would be dedicated to the mission field. And they honed their craft. They learned so much through trial and error that I think would be a shame for us to not learn from now.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at Underground Publishing, which is the publishing house that we started last year, we only did very few. I mean, we saw a lot of old books that we really liked, but we decided let's only do those books that kind of shake us to our core, that have a kind of a dance that as you're reading it, you can see a type of flow, a poetry, a way where words are put together that we don't see in modern day language, that we don't see in modern day literature. But what we do see, and I think that this is really important about these books that we're selling right now with Underground Publishing, is that these books that were written 200 years ago, 150 years ago, that are being brought back to life today, these books give us a better understanding of the world around us today. Because the world 200 years ago is not much different than it is today. Yes, we have a lot of differences that make up our modern society that we might think make us unique in history. We have internet, we have rockets to the moon, we have plane travel and car travel, and the ways that we communicate, the ways that we transport goods, the way that we do commerce seem like they've changed, but actually everything is still the same. We've only found different transmissions of communicating. Our communication is still the same as it was 1,000 years ago. Our way of thinking, our way of engaging one another, our way of dealing with emotions and challenges and hardships and death and loss is still the same. It hasn't changed with rockets and planes and computer chips. We're still the same biological, ancient human being that God created from the beginning of time. And when we go back to 200 years ago, what we find is that individuals that went through hardships and they describe those hardships, there are many times where I'm reading those writings and I forget that they're 200 years old because they could have been written today. To see these older believers that set the foundations for what we are enjoying today in places like China, and to see what they went through has been a testimony, not just to me, not just to you, but many of the people that have bought from us. But more importantly, you and I have done something very unique with this publishing company and making the books also available in the Chinese language. And that's one of the reasons why we call it the Underground Publishing, is because those books would be illegal in China. Those books are not available in Chinese. Are essential.
It's worth saying on that we actually we sell our ebooks through Underground Publishing, and then we sell our printed books through Amazon. And we had translated and got everything ready for A Voice in the Darkness to be in Chinese, and Amazon just simply will not make it available in Chinese. And so we start to realize that even Amazon don't even attempt to get around the challenges of publishing things in China, because everything is so controlled. And so even though we wanted to make our books available through Amazon, we've had to find kind of alternate ways.
And that's with all of the big publishing companies. The big publishing companies, though they allow, and this is so good, I'm glad that you brought this up, though they allow self-publishing for the rest of the world, China doesn't allow it. Why? Because there could be books written that are just like these into the Chinese language that will influence the Chinese and their thoughts on the early missionaries and Christ himself. You know, the early missionaries, as it's taught by the Chinese, were agents of the West. They came in, they invaded China, they used religion as a way to pollute the Chinese minds so that they could control them. This is Marxism at its most, in its most simple form, which says that there's a reason why Karl Marx said religion is the opiate of the masses. This was the essence of the Opium War in China. That opium specifically was used by the colonials, by the colonialists, by the Brits, by the East India Trade Company. The opium was used specifically to control the Chinese people, so that the Chinese people would be open for the Brits to basically take advantage of them. And so when the Chinese talk about the history of missions, they talk about religion being the opiate, the pollution, the drug, the controlling apparatus that colonialists used in order to control the minds and thoughts and actions of the people. Which is a lie directly from the pits of hell. Can you find missions or missionaries or mission history that was used by the colonials for control? I'm sure you can. But those were minorities. Individuals like we've written about, Griffith John gave his life to the Chinese, turned his back on his own people. Same with George Stott, turned his back on his own people so as to support the Chinese and be with the Chinese to bring the good news of Jesus Christ. The very first hospitals built in China were done so by missionaries. The very first women's schools, girls' schools, which we saw with George Stott and his wife, Grace, right? Is her name Grace? Yeah, so Grace Stott. They started the very first girls' school. Missionaries throughout the country stopped young girls being physically mutilated by having their feet strapped and bound and bones broken in order to meet the cultural demands on females at that time. Girls that were not allowed to go to school, girls that were not given medical attention, girls that were not given opportunities, were given opportunities from missionaries. Who were the first people to find out the impacts of drugs? I mean, you and I today take it for granted that drugs can alter your mind, that getting on cocaine and heroin is bad. In the 1800s, nobody knew that. It was the missionaries that started the very first drug research laboratories in China to do research on the impacts of drugs like opium on the brains of the users, and published their data, and then went to the House of Commons to debate with England to stop their practices. So the fight was within, not without. It was the missionaries that fought on behalf of the Chinese. And the Chinese need to know that. And they learn that through these books that are illegal in China that you and I are able to publish.
Yeah, so that's another side of things. I think also it could be worth mentioning, now we're in 2024, something else we want to do this year is take a couple of books that we have published with Back to Jerusalem and update them and republish them. So this year we hope to do Jesus in Iran again, and we hope to do Crimson Crucible, which is about North Korea. So they're ones that were written several years ago, ones that we can update now and kind of republish as an updated version. So they will also be coming out through Underground this year.
And we also did our very first biography that I don't know if we could have really gotten carried anywhere else. I know that the number of books that I've turned out for our current publisher, who's been amazing, I've really loved working with the publisher that we do for the normal biographies of the people that we work together with. Whitaker House has been an absolute amazing partner. We still partner together with them. But the truth is that there's so much information out there that we crank out stories a little faster than most publishing houses are used to from an author. And when we look at Robert Morrison, for instance, nothing significant has been written about him in almost 200 years until last year. And the book that we came out with for Robert Morrison was a real tribute to him, but also there's no other story like his. It's so unique, it's so powerful, and it's so intricate with so many other stories that were going on at the same time that I learned so much about the London Missionary Society. I learned so much about the Bible and the Tract Society. I learned so much about missions to Tonga or Tahiti, South Korea, Thailand, from the mission work that Robert Morrison did. I learned so much about the first translation of the Bible, which was not his translation of the Bible. It was a very powerful story that I thought that needs to be in every library of churches. Of course, I'm biased, but I really do believe that his story is a powerful one for Christians throughout history.
And having our own publishing company gives us that freedom to be able to do that. We are able to act on inspiration and kind of do whatever we want, which is kind of ideal for us. But when it came to the Robert Morrison book, we could decide when it was released, how it was going to be released, how long it would take for us to write it, all of that stuff. And so it has really given this freedom where if inspiration strikes next year for another book on somebody else, then we have that freedom to be able to do that and put it out there, which is a real blessing.
Yeah, there's one book that there's one book that I plan to tackle this year. Whether it will be finished this year or not, I don't know. But Carl Gutzlaff is somebody that he is considered to be the grandfather of China Inland Mission. He had one missionary that he was able to bring to the field, and that was Hudson Taylor. And in many ways, he died with undeserved shame. And I have just really connected to his story. We want to put his story out there using some of his older writings. And hopefully we're able to publish that also with Underground Publishing.
Yeah, sometimes we bite off more than we can chew. I mean, when that's because, yeah, I'm the one that has to get them ready to actually be sold. But we we released our first book in, it was July or August, and we had six books, I think, lined up. And thought, yep, we'll get six of these out this year. Here's the schedule. We'll do this one in 3 weeks and this after 4 weeks. And the truth is we can't pump them out quite that quickly. But it has helped for us to see the response from people and see how invested people have become in Underground. And I would like to believe that people trust the books that we put out there, you know, that people trust that we don't just throw anything out there, but we really choose those things that we feel are going to be impactful for people. And so these are the books we hope to do next year or this year. Don't hold us to all of them, but that's our hope for the coming year.
Yeah. And I mean, our job is not publishing. We are not publishers. We're not professional publishers. We have a publishing house. We have been doing publishing, but we work on the field. It's missions first, and books are a part of our mission. And so as we're working on the field, there are certain books that we come across that inspire us while we're sitting on that plane to Dubai, while we are sitting in that meeting together with the Underground Church in Cambodia, while we are on a train traveling in Western China. We're reading materials that speak to us, that minister to us on the field directly. And the thing is that there are times where I think that we can be selfish and ignorant enough to believe that inspiration is for us alone and we're isolated in that moment. But I believe that when the Holy Spirit comes with inspiration, it's because he's working specifically on a time. And in that time, there are other people that feel very much the same way, even though they may not communicate it with you. I see this specifically with Back to Jerusalem. even though Back to Jerusalem came as a vision to, you know, certain people that are acknowledged in history, there were others that were independently having the same vision at the same time with no connection at all with others that were having the same vision. It's almost like the wave of the Holy Spirit has his timing, has his methods, and has his moments of inspiration. And so when I'm inspired by something that I read, I don't necessarily believe that this is only for me, by myself. I don't necessarily believe that I'm the only one experiencing this. I think that God is plugging these kind of works in for others to benefit from as well. That even though those books were written by inspiration 200 years ago, the time has come for God's people to drink those waters again, to return to those fountains and be inspired and be motivated and be empowered again. There are messages that we get. If you're a pastor, if you're a teacher, if you're a Bible study leader, I would highly encourage you to get these books, because within these books are gems of messages that you don't hear in today's pulpit. You don't hear preachers talking about the things that you can find in A Voice in the Darkness, one of the books that we did last year. In The Lame Shall Take the Prey, one of the books that we did last year. You don't find the kind of artistic expression that can bring about ideas that you think you know until you hear them reworded. And then all of a sudden, you understand them differently. And they will come out of you differently. You and I saw that going to, we just started our new office. We had our office in Rotherham for many years. Now we've moved it to Oxford. So you and I went to Oxford to meet with our team there in Oxford. And we just went off sharing about the messages that we were learning from the writings of John Griffith. Griffith John.
I mean, the people in my life, I think, rue the day that we started Underground, because I think they're just sick of hearing everything that we're reading. But that's kind of the magic that you want to find, is something that inspires you so much that you just want to tell everybody. We're biased. I know that we're biased because we're publishing these books, but the truth is we didn't write these books. It's not that we get notoriety for writing these books or somehow, you know, we get any credit for that. It's just that these are books that so impacted my life and happen to also impact your life, that we can't help but share them. And we're in a really privileged, amazing position to be able to start Underground Publishing and to have a group of people that follow Back to Jerusalem very closely, who have really bought into these books and continue to buy into them, because they seem to be having that impact. And we have sold in 17 countries so far in 6 months. And so that's quite the reach for books that were written 200 years ago. So I really believe that we have kind of hit on something, kind of that spark of inspiration, and we'll see where it goes this year.
And I mean, how much advertising have we done?
We're awful at it.
Yeah. We've put up a couple posts. We've put it up on our website. We've done podcasts like this, like one or two, but we haven't gone hardcore. We haven't gone all in. Why? Because we can't. Like I said, we're focused on ministry. When there is an earthquake in Afghanistan and people are dying, that becomes our focus. When we are doing podcasts and there's war in Israel and Gaza, that becomes our focus. And we don't lace anybody that's gone to our website. We don't lace our articles with advertising, our own advertising. We don't lead readers with, you know, at the end of our story, buy this book. We don't create stories wrapped around our merchandise, for lack of a better word. You and I and the publishing company get nothing from the sales of these books. 100% of all the profits that come in through the publishing company go straight to Back to Jerusalem. So Underground Publishing is a for-profit company based in London. So we're a London publishing house. 100% of all the books that we sell, any profits that come in from that, go to Back to Jerusalem. And we've seen the funding being used directly for missionaries in China. We've seen the funding being used directly to translate the books into the Chinese language. And we just had, I love this, last year we had a special gift. We actually got a donation for Underground Publishing, which we didn't see coming at all. We never anticipated at all. But there was a lady that her father or her family member had worked with Robert Morrison.
Her grandfather, I think, had worked together with him, if I'm right.
Yeah, I think you're right. And she was moved. And so she sent us funding to be used for the publishing. And
well, she had these coins, actually, specifically, that that had belonged to Hudson Taylor. And so she, oh, no, no, sorry, Robert Morrison, sorry. So she'd got these coins that had belonged to Robert Morrison that had been passed to her by her grandfather, and it kind of stayed in the family. And she'd held on to some of them, but some of them she kind of felt like she had too many. She didn't know what to do with them. I don't know exactly the situation. But she, for whatever reason, felt that she needed to sell them. And with the profits, she was kind of wondering, what should she do? And we had just started writing about the fact that we were going to do the Robert Morrison book, like right at that exact moment. And so she contacted our US office and said, can I donate the proceeds of these coins to the publishing of the new Robert Morrison book? So that was a really cool kind of full circle moment.
It really was. We need to see if we can reach out and bring her onto the podcast, because I would love to hear more about that story and also let her know how we used that donation,
because and did I'm sure she has, the coins are precious and the donation was precious, but I bet she has stories that we would just kill for that I'm sure have been passed to her from her grandfather that we should definitely try and share,
especially if there's writings. You know, we've been doing a series where that's going to be a big part of this year for Back to Jerusalem, is doing this new series of Chasing Legacy, where we go and we uncover, you know, these writings that have been left in attics or in churches or in libraries. And it's those stories that we have been really searching for to bring back to the modern day church, so that we can learn and benefit and be blessed by our own Christian history. So this is something that I think is really powerful for people that, and even though we haven't really advertised, what sales look like? I mean, you said that it's been some of our best-selling book, but what, last year without advertising, how many books would we sell, let's say, in a month?
I don't know. Wait, let me see if I can. You mean with just Underground?
Yes, just Underground.
With advertising or without?
Without.
Without, we were doing about 50 a month. I know that for sure, because December we had no advertising.
So more than one a day. And that's just people randomly going on to Amazon or doing Google. They have no connection to Back to Jerusalem at all. We have people that are buying from us that have never been connected to Back to Jerusalem, buying these books. Why? Because like you said, there's a hunger. There's a hunger for this kind of writing. People are stumbling across these writings without connecting with us, without hearing our advertising, just doing their own searches and stumbling across these writings. And these are amazing pieces of ministry. Like I said, if you're a pastor, if you're a teacher, if you're a Bible study leader, you will be inspired and you will find yourself teaching directly. If you're looking for material to preach on, if you're looking for unique subjects, ideas, concepts, and ways of looking at the scripture in a different way than you've looked at, go back to these pioneers 200, 150 years ago and see how they saw the word. It will change the way you share with others, guaranteed.
So two things to wrap up. First, I want to say thank you to everyone that's really supported Underground this year, because it really has been a blessing to us. And so please continue emailing Underground Publishing and letting us know what you would want to see from us. There's any authors or books that you know of that are much older and you would like to see republished, things that have inspired you, yeah, let us know. And second, write into our office and say whether you think spiders can lay eggs.
Thanks so much for joining us, Bethany. And thank you guys for downloading this Back to Jerusalem podcast. I pray that it is much of a blessing to you as it has been for me. Again, I'm Eugene Bock, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of Sweden. God bless.